Okay. We're going to finish off first with the last thing we didn't do in the Shpatim last week, which is a description of Moshe going up to Shemayim to receive the Torah. Initially, the Luchos. Maybe Moshe, when he came down with the Luchos, we don't know how much he got then and how much more he got later in the 40 days and 40 nights. After Bnei Yisrael heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu say the Aseres HaDibros, which we were told happened instantaneously, everything at once, which meant clearly they couldn't understand, but they realized that they had something spectacular had happened. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? We know then Moshe told them at least the other eight of the Dibros. Klal Yisrael now has heard the greatest communication in the history of the world directly. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, go up on the mountain. I'm going to give you Luchos, on which I'm going to give you the Aseres HaDibros, which contain the essence of the 613 mitzvos. And I'm sure that there were probably people in the history of Klal Yisrael that could discern all 613 mitzvos from it. And we know that the Dibros, or parts of them, were engraved on the actual Luchos. Moshe gave instructions that in his absence, when he's up on the mountain, the people should obey Aaron, the Kohanim, and Hur, Miriam's son, right, whom he appointed to be in charge. I don't know if the whom in this pasuk refers to Miriam's son only. I don't think so. I think it means Aaron, the elders, and Hur as a based in, right, as a leadership forum. He told Bnei Yisrael that he would be in the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. And he asked them, please say tfilos on my behalf and undertake the fast, because I am about to enter the camp, the area of angels. I'm going to go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's area, whatever that may be, and we have a Kabbalah that there are beings, forces up there that are totally consuming fire. Please beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I may come back to you in peace. And I don't think that Moshe was so concerned about himself, rather, I'm sure, about continuing to lead Klal Yisrael to teach them. It says, Moshe's entire body was quivering and shaking. On the seventh day of Sivan, Moshe went toward the mountain with Yehoshua, and they began to go up the mountain together. I don't know how far up Yehoshua could go, but it says Yehoshua pitched his tent at the foot of the mountain, and he did not leave that spot until Moshe Rabbeinu returned. And Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a neis, and he gave Yehoshua mon every day to sustain him. And I would imagine probably the bear show Miriam trickled water his way to, because we're told when we learn about the bear that it turned into rivers and streams and things like that. Moshe goes up to the summit of the mountain and was in a covering of cloud for 6 days. This was a preparatory period to basically elevate his body so that it could be amongst the realm of the uppers, whoever, the angels, whatever an angel is. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to go further in heaven, and he was in the environs of the Shekhinah. And the Michtav Me'Eliyahu of Dessler points out, we shouldn't make the mistake that we're talking here totally, or even at all, about a physical ascension, that Moshe is going from the summit of the mountain up into the sky. Moshe, it says, never climbed higher than 10 tefachim. Maybe 10 tefachim, right? Above the summit, I don't know what. Rather, we're talking about his ruchnius, his spiritual elevation, that he was able to exist spiritually amongst the highest realms. Moshe, thus, was in the spiritual realm, and it says he had fear for his very being. And it says Moshe was reading the chapter of Tehillim that protects a person from harmful powers. Yoshev b'seser elyon. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High, do not be afraid of terror by night, nor of the arrows that fly by day. The Malachim perceived of Moshe's existence among them, and they complained, Rabbeinu Shalom, what is a Basar V'dam? What is an earthling doing here? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, he came to receive the Torah. And says, the Malachim claimed, the precious Torah, which was concealed by you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for 974 generations before creation, is now going to go down onto the earth and be given to mere mortals? We have no way of understanding how human beings deserve the Torah. And it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, give them the answer. Explain to them why the Torah should now leave Shamayim and be on the Oretz. And HaKadosh Moshe commented, I have fear that they are going to scorch me with the breath of their mouths. Do angels have mouths? Do they have breath? Okay. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, cling on to my Kisei HaKavod, my throne of honor, and answers them. And obviously these are all spiritual metaphors for things that have no spiritual form. Moshe then said, I quote from the Torah, Ani Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hoitzeshi from Eretz Mitzrayim, Mideis Avodim. I am a Kadosh Baruch Hu, your God, who brought you out of Egypt from the house of bondage. And Moshe addresses the angels. Were you in Egypt? Were you ever Pharaoh's slaves? It says, we should not have any other gods. He says, up here, there's no idolatrous nations. How could you even come into this parsha to have this command? Then the Torah says, V'chor Hashem HaShabbos L'kadshoi, Sheish Yitamin Kavoid Maset Malachtecho. Remember Shabbos. For 6 days you work, and on Shabbos you rest. And it says, right? V'sisa Hashem HaShem L'ashav. Don't pronounce Hashem's name in vain. And he says, let me ask you, when's the last time you went out to work for a living, right? Or when's the last time you had to engage in a business deal and you had the Yetzer Hara to swear, oh, by the life of God the Almighty, da-da-da-da-da, right? And he goes further. V'yitzach, don't kill, right? K'ayet aficha v'asimecha. Pray tell, where are your parents? Right? Enough. Don't commit adultery. Show me who of you in heaven is capable of committing adultery up here. Right? Don't covet silver. I don't see any money up here. I don't see silver. How does it apply to you? And then he talks about the laws, Shemitah, Yovel, things like that. The laws of owning homes, of inheriting, right? And again, obviously he says, how did these halachas in any way apply to anything here in Shemayim? And then he says, explain to me, a malach can only do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's bidding. Where is your Yetzer Hara? Can you ever say, no, I won't do it? And this is our Chazal, Nedrashim, obviously. And it says, the Malachim conceded that Moshe's arguments were bona fide and truthful. And it says, they realized the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, and they leveled a certain level of affinity, of friendship with Moshe. And it says, before he went back down the right to Yehoshua, it says, every malach gave him one of the secrets that exist, right? A healing formula that could be devised from a Kadosh Baruch Hu's names in the parshas. And the Malach HaMavis said to Moshe, let me teach you a secret that when a plague breaks out, the antidote is to burn ketores, incense. Moshe stayed in heaven for 40 days, learned Torah with the Rabbi Nishalayla. We're told that in Parshas Kisisa, which we'll read in 3 weeks, right, we'll be given greater information, right? Moshe was absent, we know, and we know what happened. We know what Moshe came down to, right? The Egel, the golden calf. And it says, right, The Malachim in heaven were, quote, happy to see the Egel because somehow they felt the Torah would be brought back to Shamayim. Obviously, that didn't happen. Moshe came down to the mountain, down the mountain, and met Yehoshua on the 17th of Tammuz, Shivas or Betammuz. He saw the Egel, right? And we will read about this in greater detail, right? And again, the greatest question is, 40 days after hearing Anochi Hashem Elokecha, somehow you can fall to the level of tolerating rabble-rousers, right? Creating an idol. And many times we're taught that they went into this sin only because to show the greatness of tshuva, that there's almost nothing Klal Yisrael can do to basically end their existence. Okay. We're reading Parshas Terumah this week, and we're going to be spending 4 out of the next 5 weeks, or 3 out of the next 4, I can't remember if Ayaka Pukude are together or not this year. And we're going to read about the setting up of the Mishkan. We're going to read about De Kahuna, right, and things of that nature.
What is that?
Huh? I thought that was Mashiach's Shofar for a minute, but it stopped too quickly. I have no idea. Hashem wanted Klal Yisrael to build the Mishkan in order that it be a permanent place for the Shekhinah. It was to be, in effect, the day-to-day symbol, a continuation of the revelation on Har Sinai. Yes, the Mishkan was made out of wood and other things. However, right, it was greater than that. And it says that the Shekhinah is able to rest not only in the Beis HaMikdash, but the true resting place can be the heart of every single Yid. By devoting one's heart and soul to Torah and Avodah. And the author of the Medrash says, we got to remember that we look at material success and we judge things by the final accomplishment. You could have the greatest architects in the world come together and build something, but if it looks awful, it looks awful. When it comes to Torah study, results are not important, or not as important. What's important is the effort, the trying. Every word uttered in Torah study is its own success. The very effort expended is treasured, valued, and rewarded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem praises the Torah, telling us that the Torah is, right, is an unsurpassed commodity. It has qualities deep within that are totally different from anything else in existence. An individual can start a new venture and not be certain of success. There's even the possibility of losing part of the capital invested. In studying Torah, you never lose what you learned. Torah only can give people gains and profits, and never losses. We're told that in a business deal, I sell you something, and the possession I have moves from me to you. Hopefully, I've made profit. Hopefully, you'll make profit. Torah is totally different. Two people sit, learn, exchange knowledge and ideas, question each other, right? And not only what happens is the Kodesh Baruch Hu doubles up the reward. Each of them has now been koneh all that's been said. The merchandise remains with everyone. This is the only commodity item in the world that one can give to others and retain wholly for oneself. The other thing is, we know that business people traveling, especially in the old days, were susceptible to being stolen from, being attacked. Nobody can take your Torah away from you. No one can steal your Torah from you. They tell a maisa here. A number of business people were traveling on a ship together with a Torah scholar. And they said, "What do you do?" And he said, "You know, I'm a scholar, I'm an academic, I teach." And they say, "Well, what do you got with you?" He said, "What do you mean?" They said, "I've got wheat. Jack's got iron. He's got something else. What are you bringing to the people?" And they laughed at him. They laughed at him and said, "You know what? We don't know why you're going there. What, pray tell, are you going to give these people?" The ship landed and was one of those ports where if you didn't pay the appropriate, I guess, graft, tariff, whatever, they confiscated everything you had, akin to the pirates we hear about. They were all, the merchants, had a problem. The Yid, who was there and had been invited by the community, walked into the community, began to give a shiur. People could understand and appreciate, gave him honor, told him, "We want you, as long as you're in our vicinity, to stay with us. We want to give you lodging. We want to give you food and every single convenience that you need." And he was teaching them great lessons in Torah. The people who were in the area who had tried to sell goods obviously didn't get that reception. And they looked with jealousy as to what had happened. We were the guys on top, and now we have nothing. Here was this person who all he carried was his wisdom, his good wishes, and his will to inspire others. He is the champion. That is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the Torah. And as someone says, the Torah is so valuable, and yet you need not guard it. We don't need people to guard the knowledge within each and every one of us. Not only that, but it serves as a guard to protect us. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael the Torah on Har Sinai. This is, it says, a precious daughter of the Yachal to us, right? And he said to Klal Yisrael, I want you to construct an appropriate edifice where this that I gave you can be honored, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina could be palpably, physically encountered and felt, experienced on the earth below. And that's what the Mishkan was designed to do. Okay, we'll stop here for today. Thanks very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you,
Gary.
You're welcome.
Jai Gazan.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too. Stay well.